Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yo, yo, yo. Hello and welcome to Full Access Hoops Episode 42, an OTG basketball podcast. I'm your host, Corey Waldron. This podcast is mixed, produced, and edited by the one and only Nigel Freeman. Today's show was a lot of fun. We recorded this on Sunday. I was able to have two guests from Off the Glass on the show. Jorge Cantu, someone who's been on the show already in the past. And then a new addition to the site, Tim Hanna. Both these guys hop on the show with me. We talk about the Devin Booker injury to start off the show. The news actually broke 30 minutes before we just started recording. And then we talk about our top young cores around the NBA and then coaches that we think are on the hot seat. You know, it's a lot of fun. We zigzag. There's a little bit of off-topic stuff we talk about as well. And then near the end of the show, things get a little heated. Jorge Cantu, that guy, he likes to debate, let me tell you. And when he feels a certain way, he feels a certain way. Especially when we get to OKC. We had a really good debate about OKC. I hope you guys enjoy that. And I also want to plug all the great content we have coming out Off the Glass, honestly. The preview series stuff we're doing on both the flagship podcast, the NBA Outlet, in which I co-host, and just on the site with guys writing team previews for each team. There's a lot of stuff out there for teams right now. Make sure to check it out. Go to otgbasketball.com. So now sit back, turn it up, kick your feet up, and enjoy this new edition of Full Access Hoops. But first, run the jewels. Step into the spotlight. Today I'm joined by two studs, Jorge Cantu and Tim Hanna. Both writers from Off the Glass. Tim is actually a new writer. He's actually got a new piece coming out about the Phoenix Suns soon. He had it out, but some news broke.
It's
kind of just
updated
it a little bit.
Yeah.
And then Jorge Cantu, who's been on the show before. Jorge, welcome back to the show, man. And it's always a pleasure to have you on. You've been killing it Off the Glass. Feels like every time there's an article, your name is not too far behind the article.
Thank you, man. I'm glad to be back on the show again.
So I think we should just talk about what broke 30 minutes now ago. And that's the fact that Devin Booker is having hand surgery. He's out indefinitely. What the hell does this mean?
This means that every prediction I made about the Phoenix Suns in the article that I just sent in is wrong. because I was, you know, I talked about, I was like, well, you know, Devin Booker coming off a career year, but it still wasn't enough. You know, they only won 21 games last year. They got him some help. Obviously they, you know, signing Trevor Ariza, but he was the key to this game, like this team. So the fact that he's out indefinitely really puts a stamper on this team.
Yeah, for sure. Jorge, what do you think?
I mean, I'm just as shocked as everyone. I just heard about the news right before we started the show. I just heard like you guys talking like, hey, did you hear about Booker? And I'm really surprised because nobody could see it coming. Like, you know, we're so close to the season. Most players are taking care of themselves anyway. So it was like I was really shocked when I first heard the news. But anyways, I wasn't really sure of what the Suns were doing. Like even with Booker healthy, out of having him and Aiden, I don't know, like the Ariza signing, it looked weird, but I was still excited to see what they did on opening night. Is that against the Mavs they're going up on opening night?
Yeah, they play the Mavs October 17th.
I remember I was thinking about, hey, it should be really exciting to see what Aiden and DeAndre Jordan get going down low in the paint. I guess the whole point of the whole narrative is now switched up because who's going to be the bucket getter in that team now, like the number one option for as long as Booker takes to recover? That's a big question. Yeah. What do you think, guys?
I mean, I guess, well, I just want to like touch on the injuries. I'm reading it right now. So this is an injury that he got on March 14th, which oddly enough is my birthday. So he got the injury last year on my birthday. He jammed up his hand in practice and he had to wear a splint, I guess, the rest of last season. And it just never improved. So now he has to have surgery, which means, you know, if this has been an issue since March 14th of last year, if he had this surgery in April, this probably isn't an issue right now. But the fact of the matter is he went an entire summer of training and practicing with a hand that was banged up and now he's having surgery. So that to me is worrisome for the fact that he was doing nothing about the injury for months.
Yeah, that's something that you got to sit back and think. Like he was practicing with Team USA when they had their little mini camp after the summer league. So you saw videos of him, you know, going up against the best of the best, trying to prepare for the FIBA and then the Olympics. And I didn't notice anything like watching his tape specifically. He was favoring that hand or anything, but yeah, that's tough break for Phoenix fans, especially.
Not to mention, he just got done signing his 5-year extension worth $150 million. So maybe this is why he waited for the injury. He wanted to.
You know, honestly, that's not out of the realm of possibility.
I mean, it probably crossed his mind. I'm not going to.
That was definitely. I feel like that's a conversation him and his agent sat down. He knew he was going into a contract year, a big contract year. And, you know, they were just like, well, we'll wait it out, see what happens.
But, I mean, even then it's, like, surprising because we're talking about this injury happened almost 6 months ago, right? March? Yeah, almost 6 months ago. So, as Corey said, why not treat it? Okay, let's think about maybe he thought, oh, the contract year, whatever. Okay, so he signed in July. Why not, like, at the end of July, just start, you know, any something else a bit earlier, because we're almost in mid-September right now, and it's got to be really concerning for the Suns.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, that's one of our topics on the show, so we'll kind of like segue into that a little bit. But, you know, this Suns team has one of the most intriguing young cores, I think, in the NBA to a degree. You know, you got Ayton, you have Booker, TJ Warren is still rather young. Okobo, who they drafted this past draft, I think has got a lot of potential as well from a raw point guard standpoint. They signed Ariza. It was looking like this team was trying to compete for an 8 spot. They were just lacking a point guard. And then now, you know, losing Devin Booker, I mean, this Suns team is back to being almost completely irrelevant. And like now you have to change your entire approach because, as you mentioned, Jorge, before, who's the bucket getter now? You know, they already didn't have a playmaking point guard to get other guys involved. And now they don't even have the number one option. I mean, the best scoring option on this team is already going to have to be DeAndre Ayton. And that's a lot of pressure for a rookie.
Yeah, quick question here. Are there any news on the timeline for the injury?
It's indefinitely.
Holy cow! So things could get quite bad for the team soon, right?
Yeah, it's definitely worrisome. But damn, I mean, we wish him a speedy recovery. Hopefully, he gets back as soon as possible. It just opens up a lot of question marks for this Phoenix Suns team. And now, you know, talking about young teams around the NBA, you know, I was looking today at just some of the young rosters, you know, between the Suns, the Sixers were another team I was looking at, the Dallas Mavericks, who have some nice young players too, after getting Luka Doncic and Dennis Smith Jr. last year, and the Kings. Who are some of your guys' top young cores right now around the NBA that really catch your eye?
You want to go first, Tim?
Yeah, sure. So obviously, my opinion, probably the top young core in the NBA has got to be the Boston Celtics. Just has to be. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Terry Rozier, Marcus Morris. Like this team, after all the expectations, the huge buildup at the beginning of the season, they got Gordon Hayward, they got Kyrie Irving. Well, come playoff time, they're in the Eastern Conference Finals going neck and neck with the King because, you know, their star guys are out. And they gave him a headache. In Jason Tatum, you wouldn't expect Jason Tatum, a young 21-year-old kid, to go at LeBron like that, and he did. So I think they're definitely – I mean, they're the favorites in the East this year too, so I think they're probably the top young core.
It's funny because, you know, when you think about the Celtics, and obviously because they're you know, they had, they were rebuilding and they were still really good. Like their rebuild was a second round exit or a third round or a conference finals exit 2 years ago with Isaiah Thomas. And then now, you know, this young team is just really good with the pillars being Al Horford, you know, Gordon Hayward now when he's back healthy and Kyrie Irving, but everybody else in between is just young.
Mm-hmm.
And as you mentioned, Jason Tatum, I mean, that guy, I mean, that conference finals, he was just incredible.
It was something spectacular. Yeah.
I listened to the Bill Simmons podcast a lot, and you know, he was talking about that series in particular. And it was one of those moments where, like, at times Jason Tatum, like, no one could stop him from the Cavaliers. Like, mm-hmm. Jason Tatum was unguardable, but because he was so young still, it's almost like he didn't realize that he was unguardable yet on the floor. And then, like, when he dunked on LeBron and he hit the three, I think either the possession before or the possession after, even still, like, he didn't, like, it was like he knew, like, you know, it's there. And there's so much still to come. And, you know, working out with Kobe this offseason, and as you mentioned, Jaylen Brown, that's a fantastic two-way wing. Terry Rozier, Scary Terry, you know, just destroying Eric Bledsoe that first-round series. This Celtics team really does have one of the best young cores, and it's contending. I mean, it really is contending because they're going to win the East.
Yeah. It'll definitely be interesting to see how they work when Gordon Hayward comes back, when Kyrie comes back, because there is a chance that these young guys, they listen to guys like us talk them up all summer long, and they're just full of themselves when they come back. I mean, it's not likely, but there's a good chance that could take some adjusting to get used to when Kyrie comes back and he's like, no, I'm in charge. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a concern. What do you think, Jorge?
I agree on the notion that the Boston Celtics might have the best group of young players around the league. Like, not only talking about like trios or duos or whatever, but like overall, as you were saying, all these names, and even you can consider Kyrie, along with other players, because they're not really old, and most of them are either in their primes or entering their primes, or are like super young but are still showing flashes of greatness. So it's definitely exciting to see how they'll, because you know the bar they set last season, it was high, like, you know, just one game away from the NBA finals, no Kyrie Irving, no Gordon Hayward. I mean, that's scary. Like, if you see it that way, it's scary, because you think, okay, now they're getting Kyrie, now they're getting Hayward back. What's next? Like, they're supposed to be the best team on the East, but you know, then you also got the Raptors and stuff. But I'm just really looking forward to seeing what's the next step, if there's one, and how big is it? Because maybe they just, you know, they just perform as good as they did last year, and you know, even that would be good. But if Tatum takes a big step, if Brown takes a big step, like, then it's gonna get even scarier. So it's just mainly that, just looking at how much they can improve as individual players and as a team as well.
Yeah, I think all those notions are correct for sure. They had Hayward for 6 minutes. They had Kyrie Irving for basically a third of the season, and they still made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. You add in those vets with the young talent still growing. It's really good. What's another team for you guys? Like, for me, like, if I didn't even really think about the Celtics. Like, I still think about the Sixers. I think the Sixers have like the two of the best pillars of to grow around, which is Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. You know, Ben Simmons being the playmaker at his size is, you know, that's why LeBron James is so deadly and good. And then Joel Embiid is just a bucket getter, you know, between the personality on Twitter, the personality on the floor, the skill. I mean, he's a complete player. I don't think anyone cannot enjoy Joel Embiid. And then Robert Covington, you know, that's a fantastic two-way guy. You know, Markelle Fultz.
I mean, I knew you were going to say Markelle Fultz.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't seen much, but when he came back at the end of last year and he got to the rim a few times, I mean, he is crazy fast and explosive, but the fact of the matter is how are the shoulders? You know, can he shoot the ball? Can he hold up for a full season? He had a triple double last season. Even, I mean, the kid does have skill, but he's just got to be healthy.
And that youngest triple double ever, right?
What did you say? So.
Yeah, I'm almost sure that's the youngest player with a triple double in history. So yeah, that's certainly an accolade. But The question is, as Corey was saying, can he get back his shot? Because in college, you know, he proved to be a you know, not spectacular, but at least a good shooter. Definitely with an ability to make a jump on the NBA level, as far as what I saw on college. You know, I don't follow it much, but, you know, just checking some stats and general boards, it seemed as if he could shoot. But that shoulder injury, whatever happened to him, we really don't know. But as Corey was saying, can he prove he's healthy?
Yeah, I think he's definitely the biggest mystery for this team this year, because like you guys were saying, we saw what did he play, three games last year, three or four?
More than that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he played more than a couple.
Okay.
But it still wasn't much anyway. But
yeah, not enough.
Okay, it was 14.
Okay.
Small sample.
Yeah, more than a couple, yeah. I'm on record saying this a couple times, but I just haven't seen enough for me to fully commit to this guy. I was the same way with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid when they first came in. I was like, I haven't seen enough of these guys. I just don't know. The talent's there. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've seen the college, or like, I've seen that tape, but I just can't fully commit to saying he's the future of Philly until I actually see it.
But you know something? Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I mean, I don't think anyone can say that for sure, because that was 14 games. So it's not really any indication of, oh, yeah, he can become good, or, oh, he can become bad. And also, we cannot forget about both Embiid and Simmons. They're still kind of, I don't want to call them injury prone, but it was just one season ago that they had to miss. Well, with Simmons, it was the whole season, and with Embiid, it was about a half. I think
a couple of years before he even got on the floor.
Yeah, and then on his rookie season, he played like 30 something games. So, you know, we're still not that far away removed from those scary, unhealthy moments. So that's also something to keep an eye on for the future. That's why I think the Celtics have an edge on the Sixers. You know.
Yeah, for sure.
Under the assumption that both keep their young guys, health plays a very big part in this league.
Yeah, especially this team. Like, I'd say that health is what separates Boston from Philly. And I only say that like because if Boston gets hurt, they've got guys behind them, right? Kyrie, Gordon Hayward went down. Tatum and Brown and Rozier and all them stepped up. Simmons and Embiid go down. Who do they really have left? I mean, they've got guys, but like, who are their guys?
No, that's a fair point, actually. All right, so we got two young cores that we all I think to a degree agree on that they're really good young cores. Who are some ones that aren't as good as these two teams? Obviously, these two teams are playoff teams. What's a young core that's not a playoff team, but you see potential in the future? Just open to either one of you, or I mean, obviously both of you, whoever wants to answer first.
I had thought about two of them. One of them was, as you were saying earlier, the Mavericks core of Dennis Smith Jr., Harrison Barnes, and I guess we can now talk about Luka Doncic. I'm almost sure that's how you pronounce his name. That's one. But I know the hot take marathon, it was in August, but I got kind of like another hot one right here. I think a really intriguing trio for the Timberwolves. Obviously, Zach LaVine's gone now, but think about Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, and surprise, Tyus Jones.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? I mean, I won't say I'm like a super big Jones fan, but I've followed him.
No, you're a Jones fan. All right, it's been confirmed.
I mean, I am, but I just think he deserves a better chance. Like, I think he has obviously not Towns potential or whatever Simmons potential, but he has a chance to be a solid starter in this league and be part of a truly impactful trio on the Timberwolves, because as we saw, I mean, Jeff Teague is good, but he may not do the job.
He plays
the long haul.
Yeah.
For starters, he plays no defense. And I've just seen a Jones, you know, give 110% effort when he's on the court. And I'm just like wondering, like, wow, what could happen if he actually got like a fair chance? I'm not saying Tom Thibodeau should just start him over Jones, but, you know, I mean, start Jones over or Teague, sorry. But, you know, just try and experiment with something different and give these three guys more minutes. There's also a question mark about Wiggins' head because of how suspect he was last season. But I think he'll just be better.
I mean, realistically, is not everyone on the Timberwolves questionable at this point? I mean,
yeah, that's
Conley Towns saying. Has big question marks. Andrew Wiggins has big question marks. I mean, Tyus Jones, I think, can be possibly a sixth man in this league. I don't think he can start between being undersized and the lack of defense. I don't think he can be a starter. I think you can give him more minutes than what he's been given. But, you know, I mean, we'll talk about coaches on the hot seat. I think Thibodeau is one of them for sure.
Absolutely.
Between the current locker room issues between Jimmy Butler not liking Towns, you know, Wiggins wanting to be the guy, and then for the fact of the matter, Derrick Rose is probably going to play a lot of minutes, it feels like, next year. And then he wants to bring in Lowell Deng and Joakim Noah. It's like, you know, this is not 2011. Like, understand where we are in the times.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest problem with the Minnesota Timberwolves is Tom Thibodeau is still living in that magical 2011-2012 season. So,
I mean it's obviously
just not going to work. He's tried it, and it's just not going to work. So I think it's time for him to move on, get rid of Jimmy Butler when he can, because otherwise they're going to lose him for nothing, and get into Andrew Wiggins' head that he needs to either step up and be the guy or back up, not teeter-totter in between the middle.
I don't think Wiggins has any other option but to step up because he has $145 million contract?
Well,
he has to step up, like it or not. Especially, it's so frustrating watching guys getting paid $30 million a season and not even caring about playing any type of defense. That's so frustrating. I know it's much harder. It's much easier said than done. Of course, we're just sitting here on the couch watching games while those guys have been playing basketball for over half of their lives. But it's just frustrating watching lack of effort. And then, like, they have so much potential. Thibodeau is actually a really good defensive coach. I know he has his issues. You know, he lives in the past. He still dreams with those Bulls teams that LeBron took care of, and then Derrick Rose's injury, which, again, are things of the past. But they still have potential. I'm probably being just too positive, but I think they have what it takes to be a solid playoff team, like an actual threat. Because, of course, it was just really bad luck last season how things went, and then Jimmy Butler missing a bunch of games, and they just were the 8th seed and pretty much could do nothing against the Houston Rockets. Like, the Rockets were on a path to the conference finals, like it or not. But I think they can actually do something impactful.
Do you think that's with Jimmy Butler, or do you think that's them moving on from him?
That's a big question. What can they get in return for Jimmy Butler? If they can get perhaps a third piece of maybe, you know, saying Jones as a third young trio guy, like, next, that was a reach, but can they get something similar? Obviously you'll not get anything on the Jimmy Butler level, but perhaps you could get two solid young guys, or maybe a bet and a young guy in a first round pick, who knows? But that's the question, because as Tim was saying, I think they have to get rid of Jimmy Butler sooner than later, because it's gonna get back to them if they don't do it. But we don't really know what other teams are willing to give up in exchange for Butler, you know, knowing he'll just hit free agency in 1 year and, you know, pretty much be open to going anywhere, because it's hard envisioning him returning to the Wolves at this point, at least if things don't get better. But on a final note with my comment, I am optimistic in thinking that if the Wolves can somehow find a way to make things work throughout the first, let's say, 20, 25 games of the season, then Butler may, you know, just start reconsidering staying there long term. I don't know. Just again, I'm maybe being too optimistic because I like Towns and I like the Wolves and I like Thibodeau, but I think that there's still a fair chance of that happening.
My big concern and issue is the fact that Thibodeau is this defensive-minded coach that we all know he is, and this Timberwolves team has yet to become a defensive team.
Right.
And I, you know, then the locker room issues, to me, we're going to segue now until, you know, the coaches, I think, are on the hot seat. And I think Thibodeau's on the hot seat. I don't think there's any question he is between the locker room issues, the fact that his team isn't playing better defense with a guy who knows how to coach defense. It just doesn't seem like it's working. And, you know, Jimmy Butler's a guy who's played with Thibodeau in the past. Jimmy Butler's body broke down for the first time last year. I mean, you know, Thibs rides his starters. He rides guys until, I mean, look at Joakim Noah. Look at Derrick Rose.
Yeah.
Now Jimmy Butler. Taj Gibson's been the most durable of all four, obviously, from their playing days. Luol Deng had back surgery after, you know, being driven into the ground by Tom Thibodeau. So, you know, now you have to look ahead and, you know, these guys like Wiggins and Towns, who are very young and very talented, what happens if, you know, if you keep Thibs and this is the trajectory of these guys just playing a boatload of minutes? I think it's concerning. And if you're getting results and you're not winning, then it's time to go. And I actually feel like if this team sputters out of the gate, if this team is, you know, let's say near the All-Star break, this team is only like, I don't know, I'm just some kind of scenario where we're like in late December and this team is hovering around like 500, that Thibs doesn't get fired. I just think there's a good chance that this could be a messy year for the Timberwolves. I do see potential, obviously, with what you're saying, Jorge. I mean, Karl Anthony Towns, it was an all-star. Wiggins has shown at times that he can be, you know, I remember him in college. He got compared to LeBron James. He was the next LeBron James when he was in college. Obviously, he's nowhere near that, but that was the kind of player he was compared to. So like, there obviously is potential there, but can he put in the work? Can he, you know, become a two-way wing? I don't know if he can. He's got the length, but you know, you got to want it. So I think that's the big question mark. If these two young guys can play defense and buy in, I think they'll always be good and competitive, but I don't know if they can push it any farther without that kind of effort.
That's a really good point. And I was actually going kind of like into that. When you're saying that Thibodeau wears out his starters too much. And yeah, he does. I think Towns and Wiggins played, what, 37 minutes per game last?
Yeah, they played a lot of minutes.
Last season. So that's over three full quarters of a game. So no wonder why Wiggins plays no defense. So yeah. maybe, thinking about it, Thibodeau could explore, which is where I was coming with Tyus Jones. You know what? Let's just try and split the minutes between Teague and Jones, or, you know, just
play Jones. They were going to do it. He doesn't like playing young guys.
Yeah, which sounds ridiculous. It sounds ridiculous, right? Because
that's how he's always been. He's not going to change in year 15 of coaching.
But like, it just sounds so stupid because he has he has some talent from within, and then he's looking at this washed up veterans. No disrespect to Derrick Rose or Joakim Noah. I still think Luol Deng is acceptable or can be a good NBA player, but there's no need to bring in Derrick Rose or Joakim Noah other than for, you know, veteran presence or whatever you want to call it. But they're getting minutes. They're getting, like, Rose was getting minutes over Jones, and that was something frustrating. There's no reason for Towns to be playing like 38 minutes in a game when he could just play like 30 and then try and, you know, mix things up, you know, slide Taj Gibson at center, you know, just try some different things out, because clearly what he's doing is not giving out the best results, or at least not what he's expecting. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah, Corey, I definitely agree with you when you said that, like, if we're at the All-Star break and they're at 500, like, I definitely can see the Minnesota front office getting rid of him. But I can also see if they're five or six games above 500, maybe they win a close one against Houston, or they win a close one against San Antonio, you know, a team like that, then I could see him sticking around. Till the end of the season. I definitely think he's not going to make it. I really think him and Jimmy Butler are both gone after this year.
Yeah, I feel like definitely heading down that road, it feels like.
But if they can win when he needs to, I don't know if that's the right way to call it, but not, I mean, hover right around 500, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 spot in the West, something like that. He'll be able to keep his job for the year, for the season. But
they'll need some luck, though.
Yeah.
The West is, and I just can't get tired of repeating these, but the West is as stacked as ever, my man.
Yes, yeah. They are.
The West is definitely, another team, and I don't know how this, he may not be on the hot seat, but I almost feel like he is. I think Mike Malone from Denver is on the hot seat, or at least it's a lukewarm seat. Obviously, they've just missed the playoffs the last couple of years. They brought in a lot of talent this year. You know, I mean, even though Isaiah Thomas is on a vet min, you know, they've drafted Michael Porter Jr. and, you know, they re-signed Will Barton. They got pretty much the same team, and they're expecting these young guys to pop. You know, if this team sputters and just misses the playoffs again, I don't know if this team is, I mean, this team is decently built. I think they have their offense next year should be ridiculous. I'm not sure how much defense they're going to play, but I feel like Mike Malone's another guy who, if this Denver team fails to make the playoffs, I don't know if they keep him around.
And that's another team that I'm kind of high on this
year. Don't get me wrong too. I'm high on them, but I think, you know, it's like do or die time if you're Mike Malone.
I think he's in the same boat. Well, no, actually, I'll save that. Never mind. I was going to say something. I'll wait on that one. But I think this Denver team's got a lot of potential this year. And if they stumble, then he's going to be the first one they're going to look to, because they've clearly committed to Nikola Jokic. They've clearly committed to him. They brought in Isaiah Thomas for some veteran support. You know, the guys they have been almost getting the job done every year, you know, getting them into the playoffs. So I think he's the one that they're going to look to if, like you said, they stumble, you know, 9 seed again this year.
So for whatever reason, I just can't seem to buy into the Nuggets. Not last year, not 2 years ago, and not even headed into this season. Like I genuinely see it really hard for them to make the playoffs.
Can I pause? Can I pause you for 1 second, Jorge, just so I can give you some names? Jamal Murray. Paul Millsap, Mason Plumlee, Gary Harris, Jokic, Will Barton, Isaiah Thomas. Just those names alone. You don't think that and Trey Lyles even. Trey Lyles is pretty good for them. And Malik Beasley. And you're still
not in? If we see the real Michael Porter Jr. And you're not even talking about
he's the best player in the draft. I think he's a total.
Yeah.
Like, please don't get me wrong. I get, like, they have the talent. I'm even a Jamal Murray fan myself. Don't get me wrong. Like, they have all the talent, but with so much going on the West, and, like, my main concern is defense. Like, for real, especially perimeter defense, because, you know, maybe on the inside, there's Paul Millsap, who kind of, well, not kind of. He's actually a legitimate rim protector, but, you know, he doesn't play as close to the basket as, for example, Jokic should. But then you have Jokic, who is kind of, like, mobile, you know, kind of not. But, you know, he gets the job done on defense some nights, but some others he doesn't. So that's inside. But then what do you have outside? You're gonna have 5'9" Isaiah Thomas trying to guard Steph Curry, James Harden. It's just not gonna happen. And even Jamal Murray, he has some defensive potential, but, you know, just the rest of the guys, they just look really, really suspect to me.
Well, no, so, I agree with you on that point. I mean, last year in offensive rating, they were 6th, and then in defensive rating, they were 25th. I mean, this team is not a good defensive team by any means. I agree with you on that. But, I mean, this team, especially for the fact that, you know, last year they were 6th, and, I mean, they didn't have an Isaiah Thomas. And a healthy Isaiah Thomas is still a really good offensive weapon, and they really didn't have Paul Millsap. You know, Paul Millsap only played in 37 games last year.
That's a fair point.
And I just think this off. I mean, I don't know if the defense is going to get there. The defense may not even get better than, like, you know, 25th. They may be like a 20, you know, maybe a top 20 defense. But the offense, it could get better. And I don't see why it wouldn't. Isaiah Thomas comes back healthy. Paul Millsap is healthy. I mean, there's just a lot of weapons on this team offensively. I think they're just going to blow teams out of the water.
Yeah, this is definitely a team that's going to – you're going to see them put up 125, and they're going to give up 120, you know what I'm saying? They're going to keep it super close, but they're just going to outscore you. That's how they're going to win.
They should outscore you because, I mean, and they have no other option. Once again, like, what are you going to do? Like, they have no other option but to go out and score 120 points every night, which, you know, going back to the Mike Malone topic, in case, well, you know, there's some difference in the way we think. I still think the Nuggets will have a hard time making the playoffs. It will not be, it will clearly not be easy. It's not easy for any team, but especially for them, knowing how questionable their defense is. Because, as you know, to get into the playoffs, you usually need some defense. But once again, going back to the Mike Malone topic, if the Nuggets don't deliver this season, I don't think Mike Malone is on the hot seat. And let me tell you why. If the team cannot, deliver on the court, I've just seen Mike Malone do, you know, all sorts of things. And I don't think Isaiah Thomas can even get close to what he was in Boston. But they'll be so good offensively. But as much stuff as Mike Malone has tried, I don't think, like, you can say it's his fault if the team just doesn't, like, perform that good on defense. It's just kind of like, how is he? Because I think defense is a very important part of the game. But I don't know. I just don't, like, I cannot blame Mike Malone because he's made a heck of an improvement with that team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the record, and they have gotten better, you know, all 3 years he's been there. So maybe he gets a pass, but I don't know. I just feel like
that's what I was thinking.
Maybe he gets more on the hot seat after this season if they miss it. But I think maybe it's lukewarm. Maybe that's a better thing to say. Maybe he's not on the hot seat. Maybe he's on a lukewarm seat.
Yeah. Speaking of coaches that consistently get a pass, my coach on the hot seat, Doc Rivers.
Ooh.
Doc Rivers is on the hot seat.
That's a good – I actually thought about him. I want to hear what you have to say for this one. Go ahead, man.
So LeBron's in town. That's really all I have to say. He's the – I mean, last year they were the best team in L.A. The Clippers were. They're not going to be the best team in L.A. this year. He's got no more All-Stars, so they're clearly rebuilding. Right, they didn't have a great draft. They drafted okay. They got that kid from Kentucky, Gilgis Anderson or whatever.
I like him. I like him as a good pick.
Yeah, Gilgis Alexander, I think.
Yeah, right.
He hasn't taken this team to the playoffs. They missed the playoffs last year. They're 18-22 in the playoffs in his time there. I mean, he's kind of underperformed the Doc Rivers we all used to know.
I mean all those Lob City teams. We can all say every single one underperformed. No. I mean,
yeah,
that was a team that every year went in with title aspirations and they couldn't advance in the playoffs. You know, they just couldn't do it. And obviously, if you look at every single year, they had someone get hurt. You know, it was either Blake Griffin, it was J.J. Redick, it was Chris Paul. And like, yeah, I mean, how much of that can you blame on a coach when you're losing your key guys? So I know it's a collaboration of both. But yeah, I mean, last year they got rid of Blake Griffin. They don't have DeAndre Jordan anymore. They have some decent young people. I don't want to say nice. I think Tobias Harris is a decent piece. Montrezl Harrell's a decent piece. Over on
decent is just a good word to describe the Los Angeles Clippers this year.
Yeah, exactly.
Just decent. They're not bad. They're not the Sacramento Kings.
But they're no scrub.
They're not even. Yeah.
But like you're not gonna want to play them because like Pat Beverly is annoying, Avery Bradley is annoying. Like they got some like nice guard defenders. Then you like Lou Williams,
50 even points. Gallinari.
Yeah, Gallinari's fucking trash. He's trash. That guy is garbage. I have been like last year on the NBA Outlet, which also I can plug that right now. Now over on the NBA Outlet, off another podcast, we're Off the Glass. We're doing a preview series for all 30 NBA teams. We actually just recorded the Clippers earlier today. We have I think we have 20 out now. We're on like 14. Check those out. We're going team by team. They're really good if you're looking for some stuff. And also we have written previews as well at Off the Glass. But back to the Clippers.
Now I see where the hatred comes from. You just did the Clippers today.
I did the Clippers today. Well, no. So this dates back though. When we did the preview series last year, me and Nick. Faye, the owner of OTG, which you guys both know, honestly, we were both extremely disgusted with that Gallinari contract. Like, it just didn't make any sense because think about it. When they initially signed Gallinari, the intent was him to play small forward because they had Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan. So it already made no sense because Gallinari is way too slow to play the wing position in today's NBA. And then, you know, they moved Blake. So now he can play a small ball four, but I mean, he's not really a small. He's pretty tall for his size. But, you know, he's never healthy and he's being paid this kind of money. You know, it's a terrible deal for a guy who's just never on the floor. And even when he's on the floor, he ain't giving you any defense. And, you know, the offense is just so sporadic. I don't know. I'm just not a big fan of Gallinari, I guess. And maybe you guys can talk sense into me, but it's probably not going to happen.
Oh. No, I actually agree with you. Like all of those points you just said, you hit it right on the head. I'm always an advocate for not overpaying players. I think that it happens way too much in the NBA, especially guys that haven't proven themselves consistently. You know, they have a good season and a half, and now they're on a Zach LaVine, for instance. Zach LaVine's he didn't deserve that contract.
I mean, I was surprised the Bulls matched it. Like when the Kings gave it to him, I was like, this makes sense.
Like that's the Sacramento Kings.
That's the Kings, right?
Exactly. It's like you expect it for basketball hell. You expect them to come up with some kind of his contract. So that makes sense. And then the Bulls matched, and I was just like, oh, you fools, between Jabari Parker and Zach LaVine, what are you doing?
Well, as you might or might not know, I'm not too big of a I kind of like what the Bulls did. I wrote a piece on that maybe 2 months ago, right after they signed Parker. Once again, going back to Rivers, I think, the reason why he often gets a pass is because he is Doc Rivers. Yeah. So it's not like, he's done a like super good job so he can save himself. No, it's just because he's Doc Rivers and he just won a ring in 2008. Well, just was not the word, but he won a ring 10 years ago and he deserves a pass when that's not the reason. And then you go to the court and you also see, I can see where you come from when you're saying Gallinari kind of like, you know, is trash, but I think he can make some shots. Then you have Montrezl Harrell, who I think is kind of like a mini DeAndre Jordan. Of course, maybe not as good on the rebounding, but, you know, he's a monster on near the rim. So they still have decent pieces, but they just need to find a way to stay healthy and put it all together. Because if not, it's just not going to work out. And for sure, people are going to start questioning Doc Rivers in LA, especially with the LeBron pressure you're mentioning.
I think, all right, we'll finish up with the I think that's a good point. I think Doc Rivers is somewhat on the hot seat. I just don't even know the direction of this team. We talked about this today on the outlet on the previous years. Like I don't know what this team really wants to do. You know, it feels like they want to be competitive and try and play for an 8 seed just so they can try to attract a marquee free agent. I know there's been talks that Kawhi Leonard wants to play in Los Angeles, but now with the Lakers because of LeBron. So I think the Clippers have some high hopes that maybe they can, you know, snag them. But I don't know. I think we'll know more so around the All-Star break what this team wants to do. And maybe that's when they decide Doc Rivers is no longer in their future.
Do you guys think that the Lakers' success will have anything to do with like how long the Clippers keep Doc Rivers around?
No, I don't think that plays any part. I think maybe if like LeBron wasn't there, now that LeBron's there, I don't think you can like measure up the success level. Cause like LeBron's a walking 50, like no matter where LeBron is, that team's going to win 50 plus games.
Yeah.
So I don't think you measure that up to Doc Rivers at all.
Like it's not fair to place expectations on the other team when LeBron's also in town, because as Corey was saying, you know, that man gets to the team and, you know, you just become, it's almost like if you become an instant contender, even though you have Golden State and Houston in the same conference. Just a quick comment. Talking about LeBron, I wouldn't say Tyronn Lue is in a hot seat, but he has a lot to prove now that LeBron's out of town. Because you know how this narrative went that Coach LeBron and Tyronn Lue was just like looking around in the huddle and it was LeBron calling the plays. And it's almost as if LeBron was making the subs as well. So Tyronn Lue has quite something to prove next season.
He's terrible. He will... All right, so first off, the title that he has to his name is really David Blatt's title. I don't care what anyone says. I don't care who was coaching. I mean, LeBron was pretty much coaching on the floor, and I know Lou still did lineups and all that, but I mean, that was David Blatt's team, and they probably would have won that title that year regardless of who was on. Yeah. I mean, maybe not. They were down 3-1, so I guess that's today. But I don't know. I don't see Tyronn Lue as a good coach, and I agree. I think he's definitely on somewhat of a warm seat. I don't know. Do you really want Tyronn Lue to be your coach going forward when you're like rebuilding or in this weird stage? I don't know. I could definitely see Tyronn Lue getting fired, you know, a couple months into the season, especially if this Cleveland team goes, you know, downhill. I mean, obviously they re-signed Rodney Hood today, or he accepted the qualifying offer.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm also really, really low on the Kevin Love extension. I just think it's not awful to pay a guy $144 million over, you know, 5 years when this guy can't stay healthy and we don't even know if he can be a number one option on a team anymore.
But I think that was something Cleveland had to do.
Panic move. Maybe not a panic move, but
no,
you want
to panic. I think that was them being like, all right, Kyrie wanted to go. LeBron wanted to go. Guess who didn't want to go?
Panic. can't afford to lose another all-star.
Yeah.
You know, but perhaps Tyronn Lue was just a kind of like a placeholder of a coach. Like maybe David Blatt and LeBron were just like off and crashing. So let's just put someone in there who won't complain if LeBron does what he wants. So perhaps now that LeBron is gone, and then he just shows he's not a competent coach, if we can call it that way, then he's just getting booted immediately at the middle of the season, or who knows?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think between all the guys we just talked about, I think Tyronn Lue is probably, I mean, more so than Mike Malone, more so than Doc Rivers. I think Thibs and Tyronn Lue are probably the two coaches that we talked about that probably have the most chance of being fired.
No, sorry to interrupt you right here, but before we finish, I want to talk about like the biggest name. Like, I don't know how we've missed this guy yet. Can I go ahead?
Yeah, let it rip. Yeah.
All right. Please tell me you thought about Billy Donovan on the OKC Thunder.
You know who I thought about? Not Billy Donovan. I thought about Scott Brooks.
Yeah, Scotty Brooks is on the Wizards now, right?
Yeah.
I think he's too new to Washington.
Yeah.
He definitely came across my mind as like, this guy needs to win playoff series. But at the same, and then I went and checked, and he's only been in Washington for what? Is this third year? This will be his third year in Washington.
Yeah, he's got 2 years, two playoff appearances. One was a second rounder, and one was obviously last year. But John Wall, he played, I think, 41 games, so it's tough to gauge.
Yeah, I think he'll be safe for a couple more years, especially because the East got weaker. So the Wizards will be in the playoffs again this year.
Yeah, should be, probably. Yeah. I mean, getting Dwight Howard was a big addition, I think.
Think about Billy Donovan, and maybe you've seen me rage all over Twitter when the OKC Thunder fans come over to my mentions and they start, Russell Westbrook is a superstar, OKC should be a better team, whatever. I was actually an OKC fan last season because, as you should know, I'm a big Carmelo Anthony fan, so I had no other choice but to root for the team. But then I'm so frustrated at Billy Donovan because he's such a – I really don't know what to call him, but I just don't get how – like, he needs to manage his players. Like, that's his job, and he's not doing it. You know, Westbrook's just
– How is he not managing the players? What makes you say that?
Because just look at what Russell Westbrook's doing. You know, you had Paul George come over, and then you had Carmelo Anthony.
But he's done that with every coach he's ever had.
I put more of the blame on Westbrook.
That's a fair take, but you know, I don't think Donovan has the pants to, you know, just stand in front of Westbrook and say, you know what, Westbrook, you need to start
doing
this.
What's your other option?
And you need to do this.
That's another question. What's your other option, Raymond Felton?
I know, but you know, just if Westbrook is supposed to be a superstar, then he's, you know, once again, supposed to understand what his coach is trying to say. And I don't really know if there's any like positive communication between Billy Donovan and Westbrook here. There should be any like some sort of communication because it's supposed to be the duo of the coach and the superstar player, the so-called superstar of OKC. But it's clearly not there because at the end of the day, yeah, you know, OKC goes by the regular season and they do, I mean, fine. But then when the playoffs come, it's just a disaster. And I may be, you know, a bit unfair because it's been 2 years since Kevin Durant left, but it's been 2 years of disaster. Like year one was just Westbrook doing whatever he wanted, you know, chasing triple doubles, whatever. But then all of a sudden, Westbrook is used to doing that. And on year two, when you have two other fellow stars coming, then you cannot get him under control and, you know, trying to play for the team, not for the stats or for the personal accolades. Just play for the team and try to mesh with the other guys. And even though I think Westbrook did make a try to make it work, I don't think the effort was there. Like, there was clearly not enough effort from Billy Donovan's part. And I just think he should be gone by now. You know, I hadn't gone by the middle of last season, and I don't know how he still has a job. That's too much rage.
Did you got anything to say, or am I grabbing the mic here and sounding?
No, off? you could take this one.
All right. First off, I have to say I am a Billy Donovan fan. I'm a Gators fan, so I watched Billy Donovan win not one but two back-to-back NCAA titles with the Florida Gators. First, so let me just break it down one by one, because I understand what you're saying. Because if you're looking at it and it's this team is underperformed, because they have, this team is underperformed. Maybe not the first year. The first year, you're being a little bit critical. I mean, it was Russell Westbrook and then Victor Oladipo and then Steven Adams and then forget about it.
That's a fair point.
If Westbrook didn't have 44 triple doubles, I don't think that team wins nearly. They don't even make the playoffs probably. And they were a 7 seed that year, I think, or a 6 seed maybe. And I know they play the Rockets, lost the first round, but they literally 6 seed. I remember watching that playoff series against the Rockets, and Russell Westbrook sat down for an average of 3 minutes per game, and the team was minus 12 in those 3 minutes that he was off the floor. I mean, what the hell is the guy supposed to do when he can't even sit off the floor? So that first year, you're being a little bit too critical. Last year, okay, yeah, the team underperformed. Obviously, we saw a big three, quote-unquote big three. I mean, we throw that word around all the time now. But, you know,
everyone's a big three today.
Yeah, big three with an old Carmelo. And then Westbrook and Paul George, I mean, that's a big two, I think, without question. And Steven Adams is actually probably in that big three, not Melo.
Steven Adams is more of the big three than Carmelo was.
Yeah, I think, especially, like, once, like, three games happen in the season, right? Three games in, we kind of all figured that.
Yeah, after Hoodie Mello, like, it was Steven Adams.
So, like, first,
that was so sad.
Now let's go through that. You know, he had to deal with a lot of star egos for the first time he's been in OKC. You know, first year was Durant and Westbrook his first year. And that's easy. You don't really have to do much. Those two guys went out there and balled. And remember, they were up 3-1 in the Western Conference Finals. Should have won. That there's no reason the Thunder shouldn't have been in the finals 2 years ago. They had that series. They fell apart. Klay Thompson got incredibly hot. But forget about that. So now last year, you know, Carmelo, that's a guy who's got major ego issues. I mean,
hey, Pete, they said I got to come off the bench.
Starting at the four or even coming off the bench. And the second question is...
Well, me? Oh, I mean, I don't know where that started, where that came from. Hey, P, they said I got to come off the bench.
Like, yeah, well, they did. we asked the reality question. Sorry. So then you have that. And then you have to go through a year where Andrew Roberson was hurt. Paul George was really inconsistent last year offensively. Russell Westbrook couldn't hit a three last year. It wasn't necessarily just coaching. It was the fact that the players underperformed. And I just think it was a poor fit with Melo. And also, keep in mind, you know, you think Donovan should be gone. A big reason that Paul George re-signed was because of Billy Donovan. He has a lot of faith and respect for Billy Donovan. So who knows if you fire Donovan, if Paul George wants to come back. Obviously, Paul George and Russell Westbrook are really good friends. So that plays, you know, probably the biggest factor in all of it. But the fact that Donovan's still there, the fact that Sam Presti said we want Donovan going forward, you have to think that if they want Donovan going forward, that means Westbrook and Paul George also want Donovan going forward, which has to mean something, right?
I mean, I can see where you're coming from, but I personally don't think Paul George should have re-signed under any circumstances with that stat-chasing triple-double Mr. Whatever guy. It's just,
I think you're a Westbrook hater at this point.
I was just getting ready to say, I think we found a Westbrook hater.
But, like, you know what? I just won't say anything. Just let me hear what you had to say. I need to control myself.
I just think you're a little bit down on Westbrook. I think you got a little bit of hate in your heart.
Yeah, I think this is Some of your points are valid, both of you guys. But I definitely can see where this is more of a – I don't think you like Westbrook, Jorge. I think this is more of a – you don't like Westbrook more than you don't like Billy Donovan. But your points are valid. I mean, you did come up with some good stuff.
You know, I agree with what you're saying. As you should have noticed by now, I won't say I dislike Westbrook, but there's just some aspects of his game. He can just tweak and immediately become this superstar that people are telling you the story of.
He is a superstar. Wait a minute. We need to clarify. He is a super.
This is a topic for another podcast. Believe me.
No, it ain't.
Believe me. This is a topic for another podcast.
Every topic is a topic for this podcast. That's not how this one works, buddy.
Okay. Let's move on for that. So my point was in year one, and you know, I may be a little too critical of whatever happened in year one without Kevin Durant, because right, as you were saying, Westbrook had no other option. Like, what could he do besides, you know, trying to score himself and throw a couple of lobs to Steven Adams and what? Let Andre Robertson shoot open threes just because the defense was leaving him open? Of course not.
Oladipo wasn't Oladipo yet. And actually, Oladipo's success, he's actually credited Russell Westbrook, saying that he learned a lot about how to win from Russell Westbrook.
So I've heard that story too. 1,000 times. But you know something? Westbrook created this super heroical story in year one. And then, so when he comes into year two, when it's time to, you know, play as a team and do things the right way, he's still with that mindset that he's all alone. Well, obviously, not like all alone, but because he still shared, you know, to his credit, he shared the ball with Paul George and Carmelo enough. But he was still too on himself. And going back to Billy Donovan, I think it should have been part of his job. Well, it is part of his job to try and, okay, so you know what, Russell? You know, let's try to do this, or let's have Paul bring the ball up court more often, or let's just try and do this. Of course, Melo is super stubborn, and all he had to do was stand in the corner and make whatever open three he got, and he clearly could not stick to doing that, so he deserves some blame. I think Paul George was kind of like in the middle of all of this, but then you have Russell Westbrook and Billy Donovan, who I think are the two biggest culprits in OKC's you know, I don't know if you can call him a failure, but underachievement, let's say, last season. So, yeah, there's some, personal bias, let's call it, into this. But, you know, it's just kind of like what I think. Yeah.
I mean, you let it all out there, Jorge. You let it all out. I obviously – there's some good and bad with every superstar. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say Russell Westbrook is perfect and that he doesn't ball hog at times. And some of the assists he gets are from just like quick little dish offs where like, it's almost like he's stat padding. You know, it's not, but I don't think he openly plays like, all right, I want an assist. All right, now I'm going to go get a rebound. Now I'm going to go score. I honestly feel like he's just a competitor. He's got that. When Kobe played, Kobe had that Mamba mentality, right? The fact of like, he was a cold-blooded assassin. He was going to go out there and he was going to beat you. Like, and I think that's the kind of attitude Westbrook has, is he gets out there and it's, how do I get this win? And it may at times get too much tunnel vision. Like, he just sees the fact of like, all right, this is the basket. I don't see anybody else, but I know what I can do to try and make this, you know, get us over the hump to win. And that's probably still the biggest issue. To your point about Paul George having times bring up the ball, Paul George, you know, after watching him in Indiana, he is not the man. He cannot be the number, like, he can be the best player on your team, but he can't be the leader and the guy.
You really think so?
That was the issue in Indiana, is the fact that he just so when he was there and blossoming in front of all of us, he had David West, Roy Hibbert, George Hill, Danny Granger. There were leaders on that team, and he was just a really good player on it. When all those guys left and he became the leader, he's not that kind of guy. And I think that's why he likes OKC, is the fact that Westbrook is alpha, Paul George is clear beta, and he's okay with being beta. And I just think he likes playing more off ball. I think that's what Paul George prefers to do. Not that he can't take off the dribble more. We saw him have some nasty crossovers last year. But I think the dynamic is going to be better this year with Melo gone. You're going to see a lot more Westbrook and Paul George playing off each other, with, you know, the supporting cast around, and hopefully Roberson healthy, because I think the defense he provides is unparalleled to anybody else on that roster.
Yeah, for sure. I'd say that the biggest problem I had with the Oklahoma City Thunder last year was Carmelo Anthony. Like, they almost relied on him too much, if that makes any sense.
They wanted him to be Carmelo.
Yeah, and
when he clearly isn't, like, you know, Nuggets or you know, when he was first on the Knicks, that he's not that type of guy anymore. We can agree with that.
He's coming off. He's got a dad bod now. I mean, if you guys remember him from the Nuggets, like, he was in shape. I mean, he was athletic. He's just a fat old man now.
He was jacked.
On that note, though, I think that's something Houston's going to be able to take care of. I think the guys in Houston are going to be able to look at him and tell him, look, you're probably going to be the sixth or the seventh guy. You're not going to start. You know what I'm saying? You're going to get the ball when we give you the ball, and that'll be it. Like, I think that Chris Paul and James Harden are going to be able to have that conversation with him.
Right. Perfect. Tim just hit the nail. That's where I was coming from. Like, the difference between whatever Billy Donovan was doing and whatever the Rockets will do. Once again, we cannot judge, you know, the whole situation right now, because we're yet to see, you know, who are the starters, how Melo reacts, or what Mike D'Antoni or whatever says in Houston. But I think in Houston, you know, they will be much better sellers than they were in OKC. And I think a big part of selling is a coach, because he's the first guy on the bench. You as a player have to look up to, or have to answer back to, you know. So I think in Houston, that they'll find a much better way to, you know, just make things work, because, you know, obviously Melo has played for D'Antoni before, but he has a much better way of communicating. You know, he's not afraid of saying, you know what, Melo, you're useless as an off-ball mid-range shooter right now. Like, he maybe can still make those shots, but what we need you to do is just stand on the corner and do this. I just think he can do that much better, a much better job than what Donovan did in OKC. And coming back to what I was saying about maybe trying to bring having Paul George bring up the ball more, I agree with that notion that perhaps Paul George has proven he's not a first option, and it sounds logical to say.
I don't want that to be what you took out of what I said, because I think he can be a number one option. I just don't think he can be the physical leader of a team where he's going to, like, get into somebody's face or.
Yeah, right. He's like much more comfortable just playing.
Never hit a game winner.
Someone else. Point that out there.
Had to slide that in.
That's fair. So where I was trying to go with this is, you know, Billy Donovan was kind of like incapable of having Westbrook, or, you know, just trying to get him play off the ball. Because if you saw Westbrook off ball last year, he was just doing nothing. He was either standing or, you know, walking around or doing nothing off the ball. And I think, once again, it should be Billy Donovan's job to say, you know what, Westbrook, whatever, I may be exaggerating, but try and share the ball more. Or, you know what, Westbrook, when you have the ball, you know, just try, you know, doing these types of cuts and doing these types of motions, you know, being a better communicator at what he expects for the team, because it seems as if he's afraid to get all his players and hold them accountable for what's happening.
I just think you also think there's too much. I think you think there's a lot more talent on this roster than there is. I mean, the reason there's just not a lot of guys. I mean, I think what you said about Melo, I think Melo would be a lot better in Houston for the pure fact that there's actual shooters around. Like, Melo's going to be able, the floor will be spaced more. You know, when you look at this OKC roster from last year, the best 3-point shooter was Paul George. Then Melo was the second best. Corey Brewer, who they acquired late, was the third best. And then you had, you know, Raymond Felton and Patrick Patterson. Like, you know, they were 24th in 3-point percentage as a team.
Well, that's also because Russell Westbrook's incredibly inefficient. I know what you're saying.
I'm just saying, like, this team really didn't have a lot of shooting options, and I think that affects the space flooring. That's why you kind of see, I don't know, I think that was more so the issue, I think, with the offense of guys just, like, they really just didn't have offensive weapons.
But what about the off-ball thing with Westbrook? Like, there's no excuse standing around and walking around when he doesn't have the ball.
If you recall, LeBron James got yelled at last year about doing that too on defense. A lot of people were saying, look at LeBron just standing around on defense, not helping. It happens. I don't if we're going to nitpick everybody for when they stand around, I mean, you can do almost every guy.
Hey, let's just not compare LeBron James, who is the best player maybe ever, but at least right now, with Russell Westbrook, because
One of my biggest knocks on LeBron, though, in recent years is
LeBron shouldn't get a
his lack of defense.
Right,
he in certain get a situations.
Pass. He picks his spots. Now LeBron's become a situational defender.
That's fair. But what happens? That's talking about defense, which Westbrook, you can say he sometimes puts some effort in. But it's just really frustrating watching him letting other players take wide open threes so he can just go catch his board and add another rebound to his stats. It's just so frustrating, man. But
I mean, if you look at the rebounders on the team, the best rebounder on the team was Russell Westbrook.
Whoa. Do you know Steve Adams should average like 14 or 15 rebounds per game? Yes.
Steven Adams should be putting up DeAndre Jordan.
Okay, but even still, all right, so even if Adams is the best rebounder on the team, the guy after Westbrook and Adams was Carmelo Anthony, who we know is a terrible rebounder.
I wouldn't say terrible. He just lacks some effort every now and then. Yeah. Well, have you heard him like scream this like swearing?
Yeah, he always grabs a rebound and yells, "Hey, get the fuck out of here!"
That's so hilarious.
He was there.
He picked that one up in New York.
That's hilarious.
So I don't know. I don't think that this team has a lot of rebounding. Obviously, they got Nerlens Noel. They're going to try him out this year.
Thank God.
Dennis Schroeder is going to be really interesting off the bench. I think that's that was a nice addition as well. I don't know. It's going to be curious to see how this team works out. I don't know. What do you, Tim? Are you? I don't think we fully got an answer. Are you on the Billy Donovan's on the hot seat or no?
I'm on the. I put him in the same train as the Nuggets. You know what I mean? They have to perform. And they have, especially because they just got Paul George long term. I think they've got to perform. I think he's definitely going to be around the whole season. But an early playoff exit like this year might put his job in jeopardy. So we'll save this one for next year.
That's fair. And then obviously, Jorge, I know you're all in on firing him. You're going to be outside Billy Donovan's house telling him to resign later tonight.
For sure. I'm on my way to OKC, by the way, right now. I'm catching a plane right after the podcast ends.
Amen. Any final takes or anything from you, fellas?
No. Not really. The conversation went pretty long, too. So
we just turned on the mic. I said I had two topics, and we ended up having a third with Devin Booker getting hurt, and we just rolled. A pleasure having you both on. Can you guys please plug some of your social media for the listeners if they want to check you out?
Yeah, sure. You can follow me on Twitter at Tim Sports Corner. Also in that bio, it'll be a link to my website where I have been trying my hardest to push out content. I do all types of sports, specifically college football right now. And then obviously NBA as the season will progress forward.
I love it. College football, a little bit sad for me because I saw Kentucky beat my Gators for the first time in 32 years. But, besides that, that's awesome. Jorge?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at CantuNBA. I usually pin my latest articles for ODG Basketball at top of my profile. So if you're interested in reading anything I got for you. I got some more hot topics, some more raging, but we try to keep everything fun. So you can find a lot of my stuff there, just more healthy discussion. I think we should all be open to healthy discussion. So if you see around any tweet by me and you want to challenge what I say, go ahead. I love to have good discussions as you may have noticed from this podcast.
Hell yeah. Bring the debate. You can find me on Twitter at KWall Hoops. That's 1L KWall Hoops. Follow the brand on Twitter at Full Access Hoops. You can also check out OTG Basketball. The podcast network we have for OTG is booming. We got a lot of stuff, some team-based stuff. We have the Flagship Podcast, which I co-host the NBA Outlet. That's a wrap it up for this Sunday edition of Full Access. What?
Sorry, right before you finish, I just want to give a shout out to we have an upcoming series on ODG Basketball about breakout players, right? So I just wanted to quickly talk about that. So what we're trying to do is just choose a breakout player from every team and have us writers, you know, talk about why this player is going to break out. So everyone just watch out for that. Articles will be coming out soon. And we expect to have all teams done by the start of the NBA season. So you can check that out too. Sorry Sweet. For the interruption, Corey.
No. I love the plug. You got to plug it. That's good. Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah, I don't know why you cut me off.
You can check it out there. We'll have them soon. So you should definitely watch out, right?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, on top of that, we have like a lot of preview stuff. You know, we're in the middle. We're in the middle of September now. Like, holy shit, where did the time go? We're in the middle of September. We're like a month away from the season, basically. A little bit over a month and a week. So we have a lot of preview stuff coming out, as Jorge just mentioned. Check out that breakout players list that will be coming out. But that's going to wrap it up for this edition of Full Access Hoops. Until next time, peace out, knuckleheads.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.